Yo, what's up, man? It's long time no see. Actually, I shouldn't even say that. I found out from TikTok that that is a disparaging remark, and racial overtones to Native Americans. So the terminology "a long time no see" actually came from immigrants, Europeans imitating Native Americans' speech patterns. So instead of saying "it's been a long time, I haven't seen you in a while," they would shorten it to "long time no see." So you learning something. But yeah, welcome back. I know it's been longer than a minute since the last time I was able to do Bliss is Ignorant podcast. Your boy has been through the ringer. There's been a lot has going on in my life. A lot of things have changed, and I had to take a break from the podcast itself. And a lot of it just had to do with personal issues, a change of mindset, and older, getting older. So we about to jump back into this with another season of the Bliss is Ignorant podcast. But I will tell you that I'm still doing comedy. Comedy is still a big part of my life. I'm in the process of developing a brand new hour. So there's a lot of more material that's to come. In the past, since we've done the last podcast, we've come out of the pandemic. I was able to readjust my set to bring in elements of things that were going on before the pandemic versus things that happened after the pandemic. The pandemic is really what allowed me to boost my podcast to a better level. And how that transpired, I was actually a lot more thankful for the relationships I was able to build and the platform that I was able to create because of the pandemic and being locked away and being able to utilize, the ability of technology to bring myself to you and to introduce me to people that I otherwise probably wouldn't have had the opportunity to interview, talk to, and connect with. And those things have helped me move along this process a little bit better, and then going on into the future, just based off the podcast. So obviously, there's going to be some new ears coming into the podcast when I start promoting the commercials for the podcast. And then there's also going to be people that actually used to listen to the podcast and came back like, "Oh yeah, I forgot he had a podcast. Let me tune back in." So without all of that, I'm trying to remember what the last date of the last podcast was, and trying to gather that together. I will tell you that my mother fell ill. She had some issues. Now, she had issues before the pandemic. And what happened with my mother was that she had a stroke. So she had a stroke, and with her having that stroke, she developed aphasia. And what aphasia was, and I think I talked to this, about this a little bit on the podcast previous episodes. Aphasia is basically, if I had to explain it to someone that wasn't going through or didn't know what aphasia is, it's let's just say, for instance, you have an electric cord that's connected to your mouth and to your brain, and then someone snips that cord in half. So the brain activity is doing one thing, the mouth is trying to say another, and it's not connected. So a lot of my mother's communication really was like playing charades almost. Like it was like, she would know what she wants to say, but her mouth was saying something totally different. The wording and everything in her mind made total sense as to what she was saying. But to me, I was like, "I have no idea what you're asking for. I have no idea what you're talking about. And it makes no sense whatsoever." And her frustration would just be shown all over her face, like, "I just told you what I said." And, in my mind, she's saying some gibberish that makes no sense whatsoever. So there's a lot of made up words, a lot of misdirection as far as her saying one thing and meaning something else. One of the stories that I told a lot was, one day, and her understanding, like she could understand me if I talked slowly, and you know she was looking at me the whole time. If she by any means like looked away for any reason whatsoever, she would totally miss everything that I was trying to say and the context in which I was trying to say it. So a lot of times I would be talking to her, and in the middle she would look away, but if she looked back, she'd think I was yelling at her, but she just missed the context of what I was saying. So there was a situation where I said, "Hey, I'm about to leave, but I'm gonna go by the store and then bring back some stuff that I need that you need in the house. So do you need me to pick you up anything that you can think of before I come back?" And she said, "Yeah, get me a potato." So I'm saying, "A potato." In my mind, I'm like, "A potato? Like why do you want a potato?" So I said, "A potato." And she's like, "Yeah, a potato." And I was like, I knew she didn't mean potato, but I'm trying to make her say it again to make it make sense. Now, here's the thing. She's saying potato. I know it's not potato. In her mind, she's saying whatever she thinks she's saying, and it makes total sense to her. So I'm like, potato. She's like, yeah. And I was like, explain that a little bit further. Like, what do you mean? So then, she rolls her eyes. Because in her mind, she didn't say what she wanted to say three different times. So I'm looking at her and I'm like, potato. So I pull up a picture on my phone of a potato. And I said, this? You want this? And she was like, no. I don't want no potato. I want a potato. And I'm like, yeah, you wilding right now, right? So it makes no sense. So now at this point, I know that it with aphasia, even though the words might seem jumbled, right? Okay, there's another part of your brain, and there's left side, right side, and there's like cognitive and all these other things that go on. And apparently, curse words don't have anything to do with aphasia. Like that's a whole different side of the brain. So curse words and anger phrases come out clear as hell. Like it has nothing, like anything she's saying when she angry comes out clear as hell. Like it don't even, it's almost like the Hulk. Like if you unleash the Hulk, everything, all mayhem is gonna happen. You would never know she had an issue with her communication if she yelling at you or she's upset. So she got frustrated and she says to me, "You supposed to be educated." Now, at this point, I'm pissed off because I feel like, yo, you taking a slight at me, and I'm not the one that had the stroke. I'm not the one with the deficit as far as communication and understanding. So receptive or communicative. I don't have receptive or communicative aphasia. You do. So I get pissed off and I'm like, all right, so now I know that she upset. Now that I know she upset, I'm thinking in my head, you wouldn't be this upset about not being able to get a potato. So now I know that it's something that you're not supposed to have and you asking me to get it for you anyway. So now I'm thinking through the process. What does my mom like? What does she want that she has no business having? And usually probably something bad for her diet. So I was like, all right, I think twice, think a couple of times. I was like, all right, cool. So I take a pic, I pull up a picture on my phone of a Pepsi. She was like, I was like, you want this? And she was like, yeah. And I was like, hell no, you can't have no Pepsi like that. And when I said that, she got real pissed off. Like, so she started cursing, she going off, she getting mad. And I'm like, mom, you can't have no Pepsi. Like, that's crazy. Like, you all in a bad situation, your health is declining. Like you can't handle, like Pepsi ain't gonna help you at all. Like you can't have that. So I leave or whatever. She's upset. Like she's very upset, right? So I leave and I'm in the grocery store and I'm getting all the stuff that I was supposed to get. And it hurt me a little bit because I want to be able to help my mom and give her the things that she wants to have, but I can't support that. So I go through the beverage aisle and I'm looking and I find this these little tiny cans, like not even like I think maybe like 8, 6 ounces, something like that. I don't even know how many ounces, but these little tiny cans of ginger ale. And I wish we had been like on a seltzer kick like back then, you know what I'm saying? I might have been able to give her like some flavored seltzer or something, lemon lime seltzer or something. Maybe that would have helped her out or whatever, or gave her what she wanted. So I gave these little tiny cans of ginger ale, and I come back to the house. I was like, listen, you can't have no Pepsi, but you can have this ginger ale. You can have this little tiny can of ginger ale. You can have one tonight, and you can have one tomorrow for lunch, but you can't keep drinking these. Like, you can't have more than one of these at nighttime. She was like, yeah. So she was happy about it or whatever. And I was like, all right, I was able to make a compromise or whatever, but I couldn't, get past the point that, she was actually, if I gave her the opportunity to make those decisions, she was still going to choose to, not go along with her dietary rulings and things that she needs to do. So we're going through the pandemic, and during the pandemic, I had to, cut off a lot of her nursing. Like, she had in-home healthcare aides that would come back and forth through the house. But once the pandemic happened, I had to cut all that off. Like, y'all can't come in and out of here because I don't know where y'all been. I don't know who y'all around. I don't know if y'all bringing COVID in to where my mom is and all these other things. So I ultimately ended up being like a caregiver. I wasn't on the road. I wasn't doing any gigs. I was stuck just like everybody else. So, my everyday was surrounded around me taking care of my mom and doing the things that I need to do. And in light of all of those things, I still was able to, schedule time with different comedians and do the podcast. And that's what was driving me to be able to, do the things that I was able to do. So, we start coming out of the pandemic, things start moving a little bit differently. Now, things are moving. I'm still doing a podcast. I can't do it as often because, hey, we open. We doing the things we gotta do. I'm back on the road. I'm doing gigs. I'm doing all these other things, trying to make things connect or whatever. So, I ended up going back into corporate America. I ended up taking like a day job in addition to still being on the road, still doing comedy. So now my schedule is day job, go, see about my mom and all these other things. So lo and behold, well, I did skip a part. So what happened was, my mom was still living in her apartment, and I was living around the corner from her. So I would go see her every day, take care of her meals. When I did have to do a road gig, I would have somebody look after her and go and take care of meals, make sure she's taking her medicine and all those other things that need to happen as far as her daily routine. The only thing that kept my mom from declining as fast as she would have declined was the fact that she was still living by herself. She had her independence. And even though her communication wasn't right, she still knew what to do. She knew not to go or turn anything on in the kitchen. She knew that I prepared her meals and I had stuff in the refrigerator that she could eat or snack on and things like that. She was hungry. And if she really needed something to eat, she still knew how to use her phone. And even though she could call me and it didn't make sense, I could figure out what she was asking. I had neighbors of hers within that apartment complex that would go in and check and do the things that I would need her to do. Say, hey, can you come help my mom do this? Or she's asking for this. Can you go do that? She still was able to make her coffee. She still was able to, so she was still okay. Sometimes her TV would get messed up. And I'd get her neighbor to come over and fix the TV or change the channel and things like that. I installed some cameras in her place to be able to see the things that was going on. I could communicate with her through the cameras and everything like that. So we was living a good life. And then lo and behold, one day I get a phone call from one of her neighbors. And one of the neighbors was saying that your mother was outside walking down the street and she having shoes on. So, okay, that was my indicator. She wandered off, left the apartment. Obviously I must have got an alert that she was walking around, but I didn't get the alert that she had opened the door and walked out the apartment. So I get back to the apartment complex. She's down in the lobby with all like these ladies are there. Some of them know her, some of them know they're just concerned. So they just sitting there making sure she don't go anywhere. But at that moment, I realize, okay, you're wandering off now. Your brain is telling you to do something that you have no business doing. So now I have to make the decision to, I gotta let you can't live by yourself anymore. I gotta move you into a facility. So that hurt me more than anything. And when I had a conversation with her, she had tears in her eyes. She knew that she wasn't going to be able to stay there. And I told her, I've done as much as I can possibly do. And I can't allow you to stay here because it's too dangerous. Like, you might wander off in the middle of the night while I'm asleep, and I don't know where you are. So she's in agreement. canceled her lease. And then I, started looking for facilities. Lo and behold, I found a facility to put my mom in, and I knew it was going to be an adjustment, but the lady assured me that we're going to take care of your mom. Don't worry about it. We know it's going to be an adjustment. And so initially when she went into the facility, she was supposed to be with a roommate. I was like, this is going to be volatile. Like, my mom is not going to be able to deal with a roommate. They're like, no, don't worry about it. We're going to put her by herself first so she can get acclimated. I was like, all right, cool. So first day she there, I come back, I go visit her the next day, and she had an ankle bracelet on. And I'm like, why she got an ankle bracelet on? And it was like, she tried to walk out the door this morning. So I was like, man. So I knew at that moment she was trying to walk out the door because she's trying to figure out when I was coming back. She walked out the door, walked up the street. She was walking, trying to find my car. So, at this point, we're dealing with almost like toddler mentality. Like, she know there's a routine. She know there's things that she's supposed to do. She know that she's supposed to see me every day. And these things are being disrupted. Her world's being disrupted. She don't know these people. She don't know this place, and she's out of her comfort zone. So I knew it was going to be an adjustment. She was there for a while. The lady that initially admitted her knew her situation, knew what her case was, and how her functionality was, and what her mindset was. Well, that lady got let go. And then they brought a brand new management company in, and these people didn't know my mom from Jack. To them, she was just another patient. And I think the timing was bad because this lady wasn't able to build a rapport with my mom to let the other staff members know this is what you have to do with this lady, and this is how she understands things, and this is what has to work. But when this new people came in, my mom had an incident where she was sitting down eating breakfast, and this lady came in and was kind of in her way, and some things happened, and my mom ended up hitting this lady. So they went like berserk, was like, oh no, you can't hit people and this and that, blah, 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 blah. And my mom doesn't like people in her face or people giving her instruction in an aggressive manner. So I don't know what happened with this lady. And I don't know if she had an issue too. It could have been two people with speech problems trying to argue with each other. And that probably could have happened. So I don't know the full incident. But when I went back to visit my mom, she was no longer in that building. They moved her, without even telling me, to another building. And this other building was for people that were like wanderers, and they would lock the building down where nobody could get out the door or whatever. So the ankle brace didn't even matter. She was no way she was gonna be able to get out the door anyway. And then they put her in this building. So she was there for a while. And then another incident happened. And I think it had a lot to do with some lady walked into my mom's room and started touching her stuff. My mom was defending herself, and mom put hands on this lady again. So y'all gotta understand who my mom is. My mom don't take no shit from nobody, right? So they put her in a hospital, and then they put her in a hospital. And the reason why they put her in the hospital was they said they was putting her in there for evaluation. What I found out later was they were just basically kicking my mom out. Like, we can't deal with your mom and this and that. And I felt it was unfair. You know what I'm saying? I felt like they didn't fully understand the situation, and I felt like they had an responsibility to be able to put my mom in a situation where she was calm and she was taken care of and she was okay, and it kept people away from my mom so that they know, hey, you can't be in her space. If you're in her space, that's when she reacts. Otherwise, she's fine. So I had to find another facility for my mom. So I found this other facility, and this other facility, when my mom first got there, it was volatile at first. But they were way more accepting. They were way more patient. They were way more, had way more latitude with her being able to get acclimated. So after a while, she did get acclimated. It was a routine. She was able to understand what everything was and how things were. And I know I'm going on and on and on about where my mom was and how the situation is, but it's helping me out because I'm able to talk through the process of everything that I went through and everything that happened with the progression of my mother, and ultimately, how does she end up passing away. And this was a regular routine for me. I would do time, at my corporate job. I would come there every day after, spend some time with her, eat dinner with her, drink coffee with her, weekends, maybe bring her something, she ain't really supposed to have, maybe a little treat, maybe some ice cream or something like that. Sit in her rooms with her, because some days she wouldn't be out of her room, some days she would stay in the bed. So I would just go in there, sit with her. Sometimes she'd be asleep all the whole time I was there. I just watched TV with her, or whatever it was. But it was a normal process, and she could always count on me coming to see her. The other thing that she could count on was like me FaceTiming with family members or grandchildren or anything like that, so that she could actually interact with them. You know what I mean? So that was a normal thing. So lo and behold, we get to October of 2022. And I was up there to visit her, and we was having our normal conversation. I came in, said, "You want some coffee?" I went to the little dining area and made her some coffee and made me a cup of coffee. We just sitting there conversing the way we could converse, and we're just having a conversation, just talking or whatever, letting her talk, let her see some videos of her grandchildren and her kids, and looking at some Facebook profiles so she could see what was going on with the family and everything like that. And then as I was leaving, I said, "All right," I gave her a kiss on the forehead, gave her a kiss on the cheek. I said, "All right, Mom, I'll talk to you later. I'll see you tomorrow. You have yourself some rest. I'm gonna tell these nurses when you finish your coffee to go ahead and grab you and put you in your bed." I said, "Is that cool? You ready to go to bed after you finish the coffee?" She said, "Yeah, I'm good." So I told the nursing staff, "She's when you finish the coffee, she'll let you take her in the bed." And they were like, "You sure?" I'm like, "Yeah," because a lot of times my mom would want to stay up all night, but she said she was tired. So I was like, "All right, cool." So I leave, and as I was leaving, I turn around and I wave goodbye. She waved back. And I remember, her waving back with a smile on her face. I was like, "Cool." So I wake up the next morning. I go to work, and I'm at my desk, and my phone rings, my cell phone rings, and I answer the phone, and it's the facility. And they say, "Your mother isn't really responsive this morning, and we're going to go ahead and send her off to the hospital." Now, my mother was in hospice at the facility, but I took her off of hospice the last time she's in the hospital because they weren't going to send her to the hospital the last time she had swollen up real bad and she wasn't taking her medicine. And they said, "Well, we're not going to send her to the hospital because she is in hospice." I was like, "Take her off of hospice and send her to the hospital." Send her to the hospital. They got the swelling to go down. She came back and I never put her back on. So they were like, "Do you want us to send her to the hospital?" I was like, "Yes, send her to the hospital." So they sent her to the hospital. I said, "I'll be up there after I get off." So I leave work, I get up to the hospital, and she's admitted into the like she's still in the triage area, the emergency room. And I go into the room, and she's sleeping. And I go in there and I sit there for about maybe 10 minutes. I'm just rubbing her hand or whatever and telling her I'm there, and she's sleeping. They say she's a little aggressive when she got there. She had been fighting with the nurses, and I could see that she had like some scratches on her hands. And he was like, "Well, that's the nursing staff trying to get her to calm down." It's like, "All right, cool." So I'm waiting for the doctor. The doctor comes in, and the doctor tells me that shows me an x-ray of her heart. And at that moment, they said her she said her heart is expanded to the point where it's very overswollen, it's oversized, and it's working extra hard to do what it's supposed to do. And we don't know if we get the swelling to go down, but we're going to attempt to. And then she was really blunt with me, and she was basically saying that there's a lot of things going on with your mom right now, and it's almost too many things going wrong than there are for us to be able to get her to a point of her being comfortable. And she said that this is a difficult decision, but what I want you to kind of understand is the state that your mother is in right now, is it anything close to what she was normally able to do? And I was like, "Not at all." Because at some point during the time she was in that facility, my mother refused to walk. So she was actually just being wheeled around in a wheelchair, or she would pull herself around in a wheelchair by just using her feet. So at that point, she wasn't getting her exercise. And obviously, her heart condition was starting to fail because she wasn't getting normal exercise. She wasn't on her feet walking around and things like that. So the doctor was basically telling me that I'm going to ask you a difficult question. A difficult question that she asked me was, At what point are you able to make a decision for your mother where you have right here, you have a here to resuscitate, meaning if my mother had a heart situation when she was coding, I would want them to resuscitate. Obviously, yeah, every child is going to want their people to try their best to keep their parent alive. So I say, yeah, absolutely. And she says, do you want to keep that? I say, absolutely. Because if there's a possibility of my mother still being here or being able to recognize me or being able to communicate with me, I still want to have that. So she also asked, at what point are you just doing this for yourself, or are you want nature to take its course and allow for things to progress the way they're supposed to progress? That's what hospice is. So she said, your mother qualifies to remain in this hospital on hospice. We're not going to send her back to the facility because we don't think that she's going to be capable enough to be able to live a comfortable life going back and forth. So she can remain here. And I was like, well, she's like, do you want us to continue to give her meds and continue to go through the process of keeping her comfortable in hospice as long as possible? Or do you want to allow nature to take its course? So I kind of knew what she was saying, but I was still in denial. So I was like, I can't make that decision. I need to talk to my brother and sister. I got older brother and sister that's, they don't do as much as I do, or they didn't do as much as I did. However, they've still her kids. So I called both of them on the phone. I told them what was going on. I told them mom's heart was in a bad state. And I said that the doctor is saying that she qualifies to remain in hospice at the hospital. And so I said, do y'all want us to continue to give her medicine, or do y'all want the nature to take its course? So they said, they both backed out and they both said, that's your decision. They wouldn't give me a decision, yes or no, right or left. They just said, whatever you decide, we okay with. So at that point, I kind of knew what it was. They didn't want that responsibility or that guilt on them. And so I went in back in after I talked to my brother and sister. And I told the doctor that, excuse me, y'all, hold on. I told the doctor that I was going to let nature take its course, and we was going to continue to try to, do the things that we needed to do to make her. Because basically, what I said was, is it a way for her to be able to go back to the facility and, like I have my regular day every day? I come in and I talk to her, and she said, I don't really think that that's possible, but we can make her comfortable. And I said, so how much time are we talking from today? And she told me that based on the way my mother's heart is and the condition that she was in, my mother has 7 days to live. And that messed me up more than anything that I've ever dealt with in my entire life. I basically broke down. My mother is still like in earshot of where I am, but she's sleeping, so I don't know if she's hearing or if she's understanding. And I was trying to hold it together, and I just had to walk out of the hospital. So then I immediately called my sister and my brother back again, and I told them, like, yo, they only gave her mom 7 days. And so my brother, ultimately was saying that he's on his way. And my sister was contemplating whether she's gonna be able to come or not. She just didn't. She was in denial as well. Like, so there was a lot of arguing, a lot of blame, a lot of other stuff that was going on. And, I'm not gonna get into that, but y'all know how family can be. You know what I mean? Everybody wanna give a reason why something is the way it is. But my mother at the time, at 82 years old, like, what do you expect is gonna happen? Like, what do you think is gonna go on? And nobody did anything. I've been taking care of my mom, or basically looking after my mom since 2002. Like, we 20 years in, as far as, me being responsible, or me being the person that's closest to my mom. I moved my mom down to North Carolina in 2002. So it's been 20 years. I was looking after my mom longer than she ever looked after me in my entire life, when you think about it, because I stopped living with my mom when I was 16 years old. So, you got to think about it, like the mindset. You know what I mean? Like, my mom was very self-sufficient. She was able to do her thing. But ultimately, as her son, I was like, yo, I'm protecting you. I'm looking after you. If you need something, I got you. You know what I mean? And that was never a situation that was reversed. Like, From the time I graduated from college, I never had to ask my mother for anything ever, financially, anything. I never had to ask my mom for anything. So, you got to look at, the mindset of what we dealing with. So, 7 days is what they gave us. And they wasn't lying. It was 7 days. So 7 days after that, my mother was gone. She had passed away. She never got back out of that sleep state, if you will. She was up for a little bit the next couple of days, but she wasn't up to the point where her eyes was open and she was able to communicate with me. The last interaction I had with my mom was feeding her applesauce, and her fighting with me with my hands as I'm trying to give her this applesauce. She knew she was eating, but she wanted to be in control of what was going on, and I couldn't give her the cup and the applesauce because she didn't have the function to be able to do it. But there was a lot of hand tussling between me and her. Was still very strong and still very resistant and still very much, trying to be in charge at that situation. But that was the last kind of interaction that I had with my mother. And then the day before they called me, I was able to have that conversation, and I still remember the wave goodbye. So that was major. The other thing that happened, I think my niece was in the hospital room with my mom the day after she was admitted into her room. I told my nephew and niece, and she came the next day immediately. Like, she dropped everything and was like, "I'm coming to see my grandma." So she was in the room and I was out running errands or whatever, and she said that in her sleep my mother kept saying, "That's my grandma. That's my grandma right there." So one of the things that people tell you, or one of the things that was actually in the pamphlet, when people are transitioning over to the other side, they start seeing relatives, they start seeing visions of family and things like that. So, that was one of the things that we had to deal with. So I will say that ultimately it was probably the most difficult thing that I've ever dealt with in my entire life. Other than the passing of my twin sister, which was the other tragedy that I dealt with, but my mom not being here anymore, even in the state that she was in, was devastating to me. It hit me like no other. So there was a whole process that I had to go through, and I'm still not over it. Like, I was kind of like, "Yo, fuck this podcast." Like, I was kind of on that whole shit. Like, I didn't really care anything about the podcast. I didn't want to do anything that caused me to have a lot of time to myself, and being able to go through this process. But it was ultimately the part of the healing process, the daily. Like I couldn't go see her anymore. Like, I couldn't see her anymore. I couldn't go visit. I couldn't hear her voice. I couldn't see the joy on her face of me walking through the door. And when her aphasia went in, like, she couldn't say my name anymore. Like, she hadn't said my name in 2 years. Like, she hadn't verbalized my name in 2 years. So she would refer to me as her brother. She would call me her brother's name. She would call me dad, or she would call me my husband. So that was in her mind. She was saying that that's my dad, or that's my husband. She would tell people, "That's my husband," or that's my dad that just came in here. You know what I mean? Or, "Y'all want to do shot on my dad." So that was one of the things. Or she would call me her brother's nickname, which was Hurt. So she would call me Hurt. So those were the things that I dealt with, a lot. You know what I mean? And as far as, how things were, she would also call me my brother's name, which is Chuck. So she, all of those things would happen. One day she did call my brother. No, I'm sorry. She didn't. She never really called me my brother's name. She would call my brother Uncle Bill. She would say Chuck, but she wouldn't be talking about him in sentences. So one day I did let my brother FaceTime her, and he saw her on the phone for the first time. He hadn't seen my mom in a while. So when he saw her and I panned that camera around, he got broken up. So he started crying a little bit. And when she saw him crying, she said, "What's the matter, Chuck?" And so then he really broke down because she hadn't said his name in a while, forever. But that was the thing. It was the motherly instinct that kicked in. Like she saw her child hurting, and then her motherly instinct kicked in, and she automatically wanted to, see what was going on. So, this right here, this is not, typically what I talk about on the podcast, and this is not how the podcast goes, but it's necessary for me to be able to tell y'all the state of mind that I'm in and how things have changed dramatically for me as far as being able to go through this process. I did a video on social media right after it happened. I think like maybe a couple months after my mom passed away, and I started talking about the loss of a parent and how it impacts you and the things that you need to do in order to help yourself get through this process. And without reiterating the entire thing, make sure you have a conversation with your parents. Make sure you have a conversation, a heartfelt conversation, way before something like that with my mom happened, whereas, her mind isn't where it needs to be, or being able to have a normal conversation with that parent. Make sure you have those conversations because it helps you ultimately get through the grieving process. Because if you're able to communicate with them exactly what they meant to you and how what kind of impact they had on your life, it helps you through the grieving process, good, bad, or indifferent. Like if you got some skeletons to clean out your closet with your parent, don't let them go to the grave with you not being able to express it, because it's just a bigger burden on you that you was never able to express those things. If you feel like your parents don't truly understand how much you appreciate them, say it to them, tell them, so that way they don't have any indication that you didn't tell them. And then once they are gone, they can say, "Well, at least my mom knew how I felt." Well, at least my dad knew how I felt. Like that's mind clearing. Like that helps you out tremendously. You know what I mean? The other bad thing about it is my mother was like the family historian. My mother was the oldest matriarch in our family. Like she was the oldest woman in the family, and she was the oldest of her siblings. And out of my grandparents, she was the oldest. Like she lived longer than most women on my mom's side of the family lived. My mom was 82 years old, and a lot of women on our family didn't make it to 80. You know what I mean? So, that was one of the things. But she was like a historian. She knew everything. She knew about my great grandparents. She knew about, where family came from and who traveled where and who was from what and all those other things. And we didn't document none of that stuff. We didn't document nothing. My mom would tell stories all the time, and we should have been documenting it. And all of that stuff is just was locked away. Once my mom had that stroke, all that data was locked away, and the key was thrown down the drain. You know what I mean? So, I am going to get back into it. I'm going to have some guests on the podcast. We're gonna have a good vibe. You know what I mean? There's going to be some times when I'm just on here talking trash, and there's going to be times when I'm on here with a guest, and we're going to have a good time, and we're going to continue this podcast. We're going to keep it moving. But I do appreciate, y'all listening in, and, hopefully, you guys, will start tuning in back to the podcast. But I wanted to give y'all some information on, what was holding me up and what has been primary in my mind since October 25th of 2022, the day that I lost my mother. And the deepest part of all of that, and I'm gonna explain this to y'all, and this is was mind numbing for me as well. So, when I was 6 or 7 years old, my mother accepted Christ. Like, so my mother was brought up in the church just like everybody else was, but she was living her life. She was doing what she had to do. She had three kids, and she had me and my twin sister, and things was going a certain way. And my mother, oldest child, which is my oldest sister, she's passed away too. She passed away actually before my mom. So I lost two sisters. I lost my twin sister, and I lost my oldest sister before I lost my mom. So my oldest sister was the one who was really heavily in the church, and she had married to somebody else that was heavily in church. And they remember them coming to my mom, coming to our house, and my mom got saved. My mom got saved. I remember her running down the street and yelling and screaming, and all this other stuff was going on. I remember what was going on. I was like, "What's going on with mom?" And she's like, "Nothing. Your mom just got saved." So I was like, "What's that mean?" We started doing this whole thing, and my mom, was so heavily in the church. My mom became a minister. We was in church all the time. So I was a preacher's kid, all these other things. I remember night my mom got saved. I think it was like, I had like 6 or 7 years old. But I mean, by the time I was 12 years old, my mom was a minister. Like, I think I turned 12, my mom was like ordained minister. So, you know, she was feet first all the way in, you know, to the church. So my sister was responsible for that. I say all this to say this. So 9 years prior to my mother passing away in 2022, my sister had cancer. She had developed cancer. There was a small thing of cancer that actually developed behind her heart. It was inoperable. It was nothing they could do. And she faded away really fast. But my sister died on October 25th. 9 years before my mother passed away. So that had been what, 2016? No, I'm sorry. What am I thinking? That'd be 2013. My sister passed away October 25th, and 9 years later, my mother passed away on the same day. And in the Bible, if y'all think about it for a second, then the Bible, the number nine means the number of completion. So it's deeper than what I ever thought it would be. But you know, it was deep enough for me to be able to tell my mom, job well done. And you know, I guess it'll make more sense to me once it's my time to leave this earth. But that was definitely mind-numbing for me. And it was deep enough for me to be able to, like, yo, that's crazy. So, you know, there's a bigger purpose. There's a bigger thing that goes on in my mindset as far as the completion of your time here on earth and what happens after. But, you know, I'm not going to get into no religious debate or anything like that with people. I just feel like, you know, it made more sense to me. And it made me feel a little bit more understanding, and it helped me cope a little bit more with that whole uniqueness and, you know, of that situation. So I feel like everything was supposed to happen the way it was supposed to happen. So that it will end this renewed version of the podcast and this new episode. And we are starting out 2024, and the Bliss is Ignorant podcast is back. But this first episode is really just me getting all this off my chest. And we will be back with some topics and some information and going back to the normal process of bliss is ignorant once we get done, man. So appreciate y'all tuning in. I'm gonna talk to y'all, man. Y'all be good. Peace.